Acts 27, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band. And entering into a ship of Adramyttium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coasts of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go to his friends to refresh himself. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete, over against Salmone. And hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto the city was the city of Lasea. Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenice, and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksands, and strake sail, and so were driven. And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship, and the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me, and not to have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given all them that sail with thee. God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God, that it shall be even as it was told me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island. But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded, and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they sounded again, and found it 15 fathoms. Then, fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast 4 anchors out of the stern, and wished for the day. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea under color, as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, Except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, "This day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you, take some meat, for this is for your health, for there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you." And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all, and when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. And we were in all the ship, 216 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors and committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore, and falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on board, some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. All right. So, in this first section, verses 1 through 11, Paul begins his journey to Rome as the Lord had told him. There are many things that the Lord tells us by his word. Sometimes we do not take heed. He says things about destinations, doesn't he? In Ephesians 5, 1 through 14, they which do such things shall end up in this place. They which do these other things, they shall end up in this place. Right? Paul had been informed of the Lord beforehand of his coming destination, that it was Rome. But as we heard last hour, the Lord often speaks to people by his word, telling them that if they persist in these behaviors, they have a sure end and it will not be pleasant. Right? That there is no rest, saith my God, to the wicked. So we have Paul's companions. We have Dr. Luke, the narrator, and then Aristarchus, a man of Macedonia. And we see him in Acts 19, 29, 20, verse 4, Colossians 4, 10, and Philemon 1, 24. So Aristarchus was one of the companions of the apostle. These accompanied Paul to be of service to him. And of course, Paul was often refreshed by such folks that traveled with him. We meet another man named Julius. He's a centurion from the cohort of Augustus, Caesar Augustus. So he's a pretty high up guy. And the other thing that we know about him is that he held Paul in some kind of favor. He had particular confidence in him. He set Paul at liberty to converse with his friends when they were at Caesarea and so on, at Sidon. So talking about the geography then, so Caesarea is down here. Sidon is up here along the Mediterranean coast. And then they start around this way, and it's their original intention, but because the wind blows them off of that course, but it was their original intention to sail by north of Cyprus. And Cyprus is that island that's right up there in that corner where the Mediterranean Sea ceases going north and goes along the south of Turkey, right up here. Cyprus is right up here, and it was their intention to stay up near the coast, to use the coast as a kind of shield against the weather and so on. But it turned out that they were blown away from that so that they had to sail underneath, it says here, underneath Cyprus. So they sailed south, under Cyprus, south of Cyprus. And that's the first sign that what's going on is going to be difficult because they couldn't keep their first original course. Okay, so then they come straight across under Cyprus, and they come to this little city called Myra along the southern Turkish coast. And from Mira, if you take a look at it on a map, if you have your book of maps out, you'll see that from Mira, if the weather's good, they can sail, they can take a straight westerly course from Mira. Of course, they would have to tack a little bit, but they could take a straight westerly course all the way across to Italy, all the way across to Syracuse or something like that. That there's nothing in the way there. They would sail along the southern end of the of what we call today the Greek Peninsula, and then then they would sail farther west to Italy after that. So by the Peloponnesian Sea and by the Adriatic Sea, and they would come into either there at Syracuse or the city that's north of that, and I can't remember the name of it right now. And that would have been a fairly easy trip. And so they start sailing in that way. They're heading west, and it says that it was several days and a bunch of trouble, and they had only come as far as the island Cnidus. Cnidus is closer to Turkey than it is to Greece. And so they haven't gotten very far at all, and they've labored and labored and labored. So they decide, since they've been fighting a wind that's blowing to the south, that they will use that wind sort of to slingshot themselves around Crete. So if you're still with me on the map here, here's Mira up here, here's Cnidus over here, Greece is further that way, and Italy even farther than that. Crete is down here, and it's this island that kind of looks like a rectangle across this way. And so what they're hoping to do is catch the eastern edge of Crete and use Crete as a landmass, sort of to slingshot themselves around and start going west. So they said, we'll let the south wind drive us a while. And so south they go, and they come to Crete, and they make their turn westward after they've been traveling south, and they find that, wow, they're still fighting the wind. And so they pull into this place called Fair Havens. Now, I don't know about you, but I think whoever named that, that's the most inaptly named place in the Bible, because here's a place called Fair Havens, and it's not commodious to winter in, and they decide that they need to leave Fair Havens and go to a different haven called Phenice, which is also along the southern coast of the island of Crete. So there's a distance of about 40 miles between Phenice and Fair Havens, about 40 miles, which for a sailor should be a hop, skip, and a jump, about one day's sail. So they get up in the morning, and Paul has already told them, we should be staying here. It's getting late in the year, and they don't listen to him, but this is actually providentially the Lord is working so that when Paul speaks up later, they will listen to him. And so this is what's going on here. And so what happens is, Paul says, well, you should have listened to me, but this voyage is going to be with great damage, with great loss, and I'm afraid for us, and so we ought to winter here. And the captain of the ship consults with Julius, and Paul consults with Julius, and Julius decides to follow the advice of the captain of the ship, who has a motivation to get to his destination, because then he can offload his cargo and get paid. Paul doesn't have that kind of motivation. Okay, so here they are then. Julius sides with the captain of the ship, and so they say, okay, let's get up in the morning, see what it looks like. They get up in the morning, and the south wind is blowing softly. Well, you see, this is just as we expected. We'll be able to make it over to Fair Havens, one day's sail, 40 miles to the west, and we'll be fine. Well, they get about 10 miles into that, and here comes this wind that's so tempestuous, it's got a name. It's called the Euroclodon. Now, I don't know. It sounds like a dinosaur to me. Whatever it is, it's fierce enough that it blows them south. And so no longer are they going west like they wanted to. They've been blown south. And they come by this island named Clauda, which you can look up on your map, and you'll see it's south of the island of Crete, near the western end of Crete. And they also say that they're afraid of something, because this is where the Gulf of Libya is, and then there's this great big, let me do it for you. Then there's this peninsula, kind of a rounded peninsula, right, where Cyrene is. And the thing about that part of the North African coast is that there are sandbars that extend out into the Mediterranean Sea, and it's very shallow. And now they think that they're going to founder upon the King James Version calls the quicksands. So what they do is they throw as much sail into the south wind as they can to help them to tack in a westerly direction. And they pull up all the anchors and they say, let's go, because if we go further south, we're going to end up in the quicksands. And that's no place, you know, that'd be like no man's land. There's no help there. Okay, so that takes us down into the second section, verses 12 through, looks like, 19. Okay, so then the ship was caught, could not bear up to the wind. We let her drive. We strake sail. We did everything that we could do. They started throwing out the stuff out of the ship. They threw out the tackling of the ship. That is, when they pulled into harbor, now they had no way to anchor the ship. They had no way to fasten it to the port anymore. They threw all of that out. Verse, 18, that says, fearing that lest they should fall into the quicksands, they strake sail and so were driven. They were exceedingly tossed with tempest. The next day they lightened the ship. The third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling. And this is probably the most affecting. And when there was neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, no small tempest lay on us. All hope that we should be saved was taken away. This would be like flying blind. They could not tell north, south, east from west. They had no visual markers, no stars. They couldn't tell where the sun was going up and setting down because of the tempest, the fog, and the rain. And so, what happens then? Well, we see their inability to read providence. They had supposed that they had their purpose established by a soft wind. Of course, we know that was not true. We have the powerlessness of the boat and the helplessness of the passengers. And this is where I want to read that quotation from Connie Barenhausen. It's a little bit long, but it's very helpful, I think. No one who has ever been in a leaking ship in a continued gale can know what is suffered under such circumstances. The strain, both of mind and body, the incessant demand for the labor of all the crew. Remember, 14 days without food. Incessant labor, the terror of the passengers, the hopeless working of the pumps, or at the pumps, the laboring of the ship's frame and cordage. Remember that they had undergirded the ship with ropes. Anxiety and fatigue. But in the present case, these evils were much aggravated by the continued overclouding of the sky, which prevented the navigators from taking the necessary observations of the heavenly bodies. In an ancient vessel, when neither sun nor stars were seen for many days, the case would be quite hopeless. It was impossible to know how they might, how close they might be to the nearest dangerous coast. And yet the worst danger was that which arose from the leaky state of the vessel. To this despair was added a further suffering from the want of food. In consequence of the injury done to the provisions and the impossibility of preparing any regular meal. Hence we see the force of the phrase which alludes to what a casual reader might suppose an unimportant part of the suffering, the fact that there was much abstinence. It was in this time of utter weariness and despair that to the apostle there rose up a light in the darkness, and that light was made the means of encouraging and saving the rest. Now you know why I read that. Very helpful to the understanding of the passage. And so that brings us to verse 21, the final section. We have Paul, notice, after long abstinence, not just the abstinence with regard to food, but abstinence with regard to him not speaking up and saying, I told you so. He's patient. He's careful. But he knows when the time is right. He knows because the angel of the Lord had appeared to him, telling him what would happen. And so the very next morning, he doesn't keep that secret to himself, but he will offer that comfort to the rest of the people on the ship. This is a man fearless and compassionate at the same time. And so what does he do? He stands in the midst of the ship, and he does remind them of his former understanding of the sea, so that they might be the more mindful of hearing him now. And that's the only reason. This is not an I told you so. There's no pride in this. This is to gain a hearing from them. It is to gain their trust. So then, he waited to speak until he was expected to do so and had pertinent information to their crisis, and his speech was filled with hope. It was not a vindication of himself. So then he encourages the crew and passengers in a pastoral way. He speaks of God who has spoken to him, God who sends the storms. Mariners knew that name, God. Now Paul uses it to help them to understand that he is in close communion with the one who has sent the storm. And so he speaks to them by way of pastoral comfort. He uses his own faith as an encouragement to them also to believe in God and to join him in his efforts. He pulls no punches. He speaks the truth. He speaks of the difficulties that they will indeed suffer. No false promises of bliss, but that they will lose the ship, yet all of them will make it to the land. Note now the convinced nature of the centurion at this time. Now he hearkens to Paul. It said at one point that when they crossed by Crete and Clauda, it said that we had much to do to gather up the boat. It's hard to know what they're talking about there in King James English. The Greek word for boat there is the one that we get skiff from. So they had a boat that they were towing behind them, and they were afraid the sea was so tough that they would lose it. So they drew it in and lashed it to the side of their vessel, but it was much work to do that. Very tiring, and exhausted many that worked on it. Well, now there are men that want to cut the skiff loose and escape on it. And Paul says, if these leave the boat, ye, all of you, cannot be saved. And so the centurion takes his word for it, and he cuts. Amazing thing, they cut the ropes holding that ship and let her fall off, that little boat, that skiff, and let it fall off. What does that tell you, beloved? Think about that. Try to interpret that. Try to understand it in the situation. That tells us that the master of the ship and this centurion, Julian, had complete trust in what Paul had told them, that they would all be saved if they remained together on the boat. And so note what happens in the midst of this trial here and how the folks' minds are turned to the Apostle Paul. So then he tells them that it's time to take care of themselves, to take a little meat. And so right in the middle of the Euryclodon, the Apostle Paul takes some bread out of a barrel and blesses it and thanks God and distributes it. What an amazingly calming influence Paul is to this horrible and tempestuous situation. So they are encouraged, they take food, and Paul gives thanks, because there is always something to be thankful for. So then, notice, the centurion was willing to save Paul and the rest of the prisoners then, while the other soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners. And so finally they saw some land and they sounded. Children, what that means is they had a bag of rocks, sort of, something like that. And it was on a rope, and the rope was marked with measurements. And so they let the bag of rocks over the side. They let it fall until it hit the bottom. And at the first sounding, it was 20 fathoms. A fathom is about 4 or 5 feet. And the second sounding, it was 15 fathoms. What does that tell you? It's getting shallower. And so now they're afraid that they're going to be founded on the rocks, that they're going to crash into the shoreline and be broken up, and everyone's going to die. And so they throw out 4 anchors in the rear, and they wait for the day. Says they wished for the day. I'm sure Paul was praying. But the rest of them, not being believers, wished for the day. That is, when the sun would be up, so they would have enough vision that they could see how to put the ship onto the land rather than sail in the middle of the night. So they put the anchor out, tried to hold the ship firm, and now we have the sun coming up, and they discerned a creek. And what does a creek mean? A creek means some depth. And so they decide that they're going to loose the rudder bands. What does that mean? Well, there is a rudder on the ship that is turned by either a wheel or a lever, by two or three men that would turn. And this is a pretty big ship. It has well over 200 people on it. And so they loose the rudder bands because they had them heeled over to one side so that they could sail in a particular direction contrary to the wind. So they loose the rudder bands and they make for land. So they're going to put everything they've got into this last push to see if they can get into this creek bed and ground the ship there so that it will stay. And praise the Lord, it did. It stuck. It stuck fast. That is in the forepart. The hinder part was so beaten by the waves that the ship began to fall apart. You might think that a tragedy. I'll tell you. The prisoners and sailors that didn't know how to swim, they didn't think that was a tragedy at all. They found in those bits of ship a lifeboard to bring them to land. And so while the ship served them as far as it did to get them as far as it did, even in its being broken up, the Lord made use of that ship that each of them had a life raft to make it to the land. And it says, just like Paul prophesied, that every one of them made it to the shore. That really is where the chapter ends. It is an amazing passage in that we see the great example of the Apostle Paul. Aren't you reminded, at least a little bit, of that time when the disciples wake up Christ in the middle of the night on the Sea of Galilee? Master, don't you care that we're perishing? It seems that Paul was not afraid at all. He had faith in the God who had told him, "You will all live." Well, what a great example. What a wonderful story. And again, what a great trip to Rome to preach Christ to Caesar's household. With that then, let's stand and call upon the Lord in prayer.